cultivate them in a very intentional way based on the feeling you want to produce. And you have to have some level of emotional awareness to be able to think about the feelings and the emotions you want to produce. And I mean, 95% of our buying decisions are made in our subconscious, which is where our emotions live. And so that is just absolutely critical that you cultivate a brand based on that emotional awareness of how do we want to make our audience feel.
Life is an endless stream of challenges, but no worries. Manoj is bringing the world's best minds right here for you.
My gosh, Manoj, you just blew my mind.
Thank you, universe. Manoj, thank you.
I'm so grateful.
Makes me feel a little bit better.
Thank you.
Bootstrapping Your Dreams is here to give you what you need to succeed.
Hello and welcome to this new episode of Bootstrapping Your Dreams show. I'm your host, Manoj Agarwal, and today we'll be talking with Christine Merry. So Christine, welcome to the show. We met at an event, which was quite interesting. We met a lot of interesting people there. And as we were discussing before we started the interview, we always find, we connect with somebody and we resonate with them. We don't know exactly why. We didn't even get a chance to talk with each other quite a bit, but nevertheless, we connected and here we are. And, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your entrepreneurial journey? How did you get here? And then we can dive right in.
Yes. Yeah. So it was such a pleasure meeting you. I think it was about almost exactly a month ago where we met in Hollywood, and it was such a good event. I was so surprised. I mean, in one sense, you can see it coming when you're in a good room, you meet good people, but the alignment of values across just almost every single person I encountered, it blew me away. And even this conversation here, right before we jumped on, it was exciting, just the resonance there of values and the way that we just kind of view life. So I'm excited to be here. So thank you for having me. My entrepreneurial journey, it was so funny. Someone said the other day, they were like, Christine Marie, she's an entrepreneur. And they introduced me in that vein. And I paused a little bit because entrepreneur isn't necessarily the way I identify, right? I think that a lot of times we do take on that persona of I am an entrepreneur, or I am a CEO, or I am a founder, or I am even, people will say, I'm a husband or a brother, and they kind of identify with however they've been labeled, whether it's by society or even their status in life. I'm excited to kind of get to how I kind of more so identify today in terms of just, it's so much more of a holistic perspective and viewing life in a holistic, integrated way in order that you really bring your true self, and then your true self impacts all of those areas. So I'm excited to talk about that in a little bit, but in terms of kind of my entrepreneurial journey, started the company in 2019, and before that, really just was cultivating and kind of being quiet in my professional career and just really learning in real time, spending so much time. I was speaking with someone about this just the other day about how I really got to know a full breadth of integrated marketing, because that's what we offer. We do the brand clarity and brand strategy. And then that translates into what the marketing strategy looks like, and then the fulfillment thereof in a very integrated way. And so much of my journey was spent listening to podcasts, and before podcasts were even that popular. So for the past 10 years, I've just been listening to experts in real time about what they've been learning and the real algorithmic changes and how technology is changing. And, you hear about the shifting landscape all the time. And it's so true, especially when it comes to this area of marketing and just technological advances. It's constantly changing. And so a lot of my professional career was spent not only just, doing the work, but just educating myself in a very ongoing way daily. And so that really was the catalyst ultimately to starting my own business in 2019. So the education in a very holistic way was really impactful for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I one thing I find common between successful entrepreneurs and anybody who's ambitious, I always recommend they invest in themselves. And it seems like, that investment is the best investment you can pay, you can make. And then it pays off sooner or later in ways that we cannot even imagine.
Yes, I love that. It's so true. And I think investing in yourself, it's like if you've never done it, It's this elusive, what does that mean? I was actually in, so I started therapy 2 years ago, and it has just been so meaningful for me to just explore this whole new world, because for the majority of my life, you know, I grew up in a household where it was, you know, don't show emotion and just kind of grit and love people, but don't have emotions. And so when I started therapy, it was just, you know, my therapist was like, I think you should spend more time being. And I brought out my notebook. I'm like, okay, well, what's one, two steps to, you know, to being? He was like, no, you're missing the point. And I think that's especially when it's an entrepreneur, you know, they're so used to, here's my roadmap, here's my vision, here's my plan, you know, ABC, you know, 25 steps to success. And so when it comes to investing in yourself, you're kind of like, oh, well, who, what, how do I do that? you know, what's my chart? So I love that. How have you done that, Manoush? How have you found kind of the pathway to do that?
You know, as we were discussing earlier, I mean, it's more about getting in touch with ourselves and like really understanding what we want as a human being, as our soul, nourish the soul, the heart, and just sort of, you know, we all have that GPS internally, right, which tells us, hey, you know, I want to do this, but then our mind kicks in and says, oh, no, you can do this later. You know, once you do this, right. You know, once you have $1 million in your bank, you know, once you have that car, you know, you can do that. But then I think the investment in yourself is listening to yourself and say, hey, I want to, you know, just go and have some fun near the water right now.
Yes.
And that's sort of the investment that we want to make in ourselves and say, okay, you know, spending that time with ourselves will pay off and get us that $1 million or the car eventually. But, you know, even if it doesn't, hey, you know, the time I spend and investing in myself, making myself happy is the true wealth, right?
Right. Oh, the true wealth. I love that. And I love that you said nourish the soul.
Yeah.
Because truly, if you think about it, I considered this analogy a couple of weeks ago. It was kind of that, imagine a pyramid, if you would, and kind of what I referenced earlier about our personas, you know, the entrepreneur, the CEO. And if yourself and your soul is at the very top, considering that that's the cascading effect and how the health and wellness of your soul permeates the success of your business, permeates the success of your family, permeates the success of your friend groups and even hobbies. You know, we forget and neglect that. But heavens, if we spend 30, 40, 50 years pursuing our last 10 years of our life so that we can be happy then. And people talk about this, but what does that actually look like, right? And so I like that you use the example of even just going to the water, you know, knowing what actually is nourishing to your soul. I have the same affinity for water. It's only kind of been explored in the last year. My family and I, we spent Christmas in Myrtle Beach last year, which is in, I think it's in South Carolina. And so we spent the beach, Christmas on the beach and at the water, and it was so nourishing. And I'm going to start using that word because that's exactly what it is. It's feeding the soul. We spend so much time, if you think of our bodies, you know, we've got the heart and the mind and the body and the soul, but we spend time feeding the mind. Yeah, hopefully we're feeding our bodies in terms of physical activity and stimulation and along those regards, but we forget about the soul. We neglect that part. And that is just as important as all the other parts. So technically we're not even functioning as a full human if we are not taking the time to feed and cultivate and water that significant part of us. Because that's the inner part. And frankly, that is really what sets us apart from everyone else. Kind of that concept of, well, we all have a brand, whether we admit it or not, but especially as entrepreneurs, what sets you apart from your competition? Well, I would beg to say that it's the soul.
Yeah.
You know, we all have bodies and some look better than others perhaps, but really, and even the mind, you know, is your product really, truly that proprietary in comparison with your competitors? But if it's really the soul and you're leading with the soul, no one has your soul.
Yeah.
And that is completely and entirely yours. And so if you're really leading with that, heavens, you'll attract the right people and you'll attract your tribe and cultivate that bench of people who are going to be on your team propelling you forward and encouraging you and ultimately opening doors and providing opportunities for you to succeed because they are invested in who you are, not just your product offering and service.
Exactly, exactly. So let's dive into it now. So, how did you find your journey of self-awareness, of finding yourself? Let's talk about that, and then we'll come back to the business side of things and how it actually affected your business.
Yeah. So kind of the whole journey of finding myself. So it was actually kind of very similar to when I started my business. I started exploring the Enneagram. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's a personality test similar to Myers-Briggs. Okay. So we think about DISC assessment, we've got Myers-Briggs, and then we've also got the Enneagram. And it's just a different way of looking at people. And that was a catalyst to not only knowing myself, but knowing those around me. And being able to have a category for actions and words and motivations and fears and behaviors, just so that I could go that much deeper in the way I can connect with others. And that's actually been a very common theme in the way that we run our business. We use the Enneagram, this personality test, in the way we look at our target audiences on behalf of our brands and our clients. And so taking an emotion-driven approach, that whole concept of knowing self very much is translating into the business. But I first had to do that work for myself and in myself, and then bring that forward on the business side of things. And so really there have been really hard times actually that kind of shaken me. And I think that shaking and that shifting, if you're willing to lean into that, you will uncover a wealth of goodness. Look at how that part of my childhood, that experience really impacted this moment in time. Yeah. Even though that thing is hard, well, really, my response to it is probably predicated on something more deep, and likely having to do with some childhood traumas or experiences that's lending to my knee-jerk reaction in this moment. Yeah. And so taking the time to really explore what has been in order to actually have clear visibility on what is currently taking place in this moment. And ultimately, I mean, if you think about it, how can you really have a strong vision for your life if you have not taken stock of your soul?
Yeah.
So being able to know truly what you said, this knowing what you want, well, if you haven't done that deep work and leaned into the discomfort of it, that just, someone used this analogy the other day and I thought it was so beautiful, kind of looking through, have you ever had glasses or gone to get an eye exam?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you put your face forward and they turn those dials and then all of a sudden you can see clearly. It's like that,
yeah.
You know, when we go through those moments, it's the dial shift. If we let them and we let our soul be cultivated, it brings clarity, not only on this moment, but the past and the future.
Yeah.
So that was a big catalyst for me in about 2020, 2021, where I really started to turn those dials and allow the experiences around me to inform the way I view the world rather than just kind of resisting because it was uncomfortable.
I completely agree. I think that analogy that you use, like, you know, the dials to see clearly, because I've went through similar experience of you know, taking the personality tests and learning more about ourselves. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that what I found was, as you said, like a lot of the childhood traumas that we just carry on our backs as a lifelong burden and say, hey, you know, this is who we are. And then on top of that, just society just keeps putting more and more and more. And then our eyesight gets so blurry that we only see what other people tell us. Okay, you know, go get a job.
That's good.
You know, do all of these things. This is the normal way of doing it. And if you deviate, by the way, you are an outcast. So, you know, and then once you finally, like, sort of understand yourself, you say, oh, maybe they were giving us the right instructions of, hey, we don't belong here, or, you know, we need to pick a different path here and put that weight down.
Right.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. What a good, that is so wise. Because if we haven't turned the dials to see clearly for ourselves, to your point, we will only, our success will be measured by those around us. not in accordance with who we are and even what our calling is. Like that whole concept of having a really strong vision in accordance with what we want and ultimately what stirs our heart and our passion, you know, and being an outcast. I think that there's something about the entrepreneurial journey that is entirely lonely.
Yeah.
And it's really, really easy to get discouraged. And when you are rejected, because you will, it's a lot harder to face that and to move forward with the same, and maybe it's a little, not the same confidence. Maybe it's altered a little bit because frankly, that rejection, maybe that's a tweak on the dial to see even more clearly, well, that's not actually what I want this, but this is, you know, ever so slightly. And then move forward, you know, but if we don't have that and we're being informed by the voices around us, it's going to be so hard to have the grit necessary to keep going. And I don't, have you ever experienced this? I found that sometimes those closest to us actually can be the voices in our head that aren't what we really need.
Absolutely. I mean, I always tell, you know, whoever I coach or mentor as an entrepreneur that the closest ones to you are the ones to watch out because they have the most impact on it. The thing is that I don't blame anybody because they are trying to be protective because they have their own lenses to see the life through, right? So you can imagine if you go to a you know, optometrist and you get your friend to check their eyes and then you borrow their lenses to see through.
Oh my gosh.
You know, you'll be like, okay, I guess this is okay, but
you know, it's so true. And it takes a semblance of bravery to be willing to see through your own lens because, I mean, strong brands have lovers and haters. And so it's a decision to step in to that position, to that seat, to look through those lenses and adopt them as your own, knowing full well that there will be people who are not attracted to not only the way you view the world, but also if you are walking in alignment with who you are, you know, that it's going to potentially rub people the wrong way. And it takes bravery to do that and do so willingly.
In a way, when I talk about these things and when I share thoughts with like-minded people like yourself, I almost find like entrepreneurship is a journey of self-discovery. And I think being lonely and courageous is part of that journey itself. It's almost like, you know, think of the Buddha leaving his family.
Yes.
In a way, he was an entrepreneur as well, trying to figure out himself.
That's
and then
so
sharing
good.
That knowledge with others, right?
That's so good. And it had such colossal impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was because he was being true to himself and he said no to those other voices. And it's a sacrifice, you know, but for a higher purpose.
Yeah.
I wrote this down a couple months ago because it hit me and I just had never, I thought about the stronger and tough lovers and haters, right? But when you take that and apply it personally, that is hard. That is so, so hard to leave those behind, maybe just in a metaphorical way where you're choosing, you're putting up a gate to your soul and being very judicious and watchful over who you let in.
Yeah.
And it's changing the position seat, right? Because when we're children, we just, it's almost like our parents are and our community are filling us. And now as we're adults, we're taking things out. But then when we supplement and fill in with new information and new individuals and new influences, doing so where we're now in the power seat, allowing people in and not in, you know? And it's a big dynamic shift.
Yeah. That's sort of again going back to self-awareness. As we clear our lenses, then we can recognize other people, situations, opportunities, and we can be very selective and say, okay, you know, these are the only ones I will let in. And I think one thing I also want to ask in my life, what I have experienced is the fear of letting go of some things is so unfounded that we almost become so afraid of letting go. But then as soon as we let go of one thing, we realize it creates that empty space to let something better come in, isn't it?
I completely agree. And that's the thing that I think is so beautiful. And I'm glad you brought it so full circle, because entirely so, as you're moving away from those voices and influences that are frankly just not going to propel you to where you need to get to, you, by way of being committed to your soul and your calling, will, you just can't help but attract the right ones, the people who are going to fill you. And frankly, it is a void, that it's a chasm that's created when you are emptying yourself of those, and not even negative so much. Maybe it's as simple as neutral.
Yeah.
But if you're hungry for more, and if you are willing to do the deep work, and you're willing to go a step beyond and even above, there's something about kind of like that, climbing that mountain. There's a beautiful book about, it's called The Second Mountain by David Brooks. And he talks about the transcending from mountain number one, which is kind of that, it's about me and my journey in life. And then you move to the second mountain, which you're kind of looking around and, oh, wow, this whole new world has opened up to you. And who do I intentionally want to bring in on my bench, and doing so much more for the sake of the community, but doing so in a way where you're so well-founded in who you are. And it's a return, you know, it's a return on your investment. So if you're investing in yourself, the returns are so significant.
Yeah. That's so so deep, and I hope people are able to make sense of it, because we've all heard similar advice, but until you start moving in that direction, as you said, like, it's kind of difficult to comprehend. But at the end of the day, like, it's simple, as simple as saying, okay, just listen to your heart and follow it, and then letting go of other people. I also found sometimes. I used to feel guilty that, you know, I'm letting go of this person. But one mentor of mine made me realize maybe that is the most important thing they need right now as a lesson in their life.
That's interesting.
Right?
I really like that. Yes. Yeah. If you consider how much is done out of guilt, you know, and if we were to move beyond that, well, goodness, maybe they've been doing the same thing, and maybe you're freeing them up as you're freeing yourself. And what an incredible concept. And even just trusting, you know, there's something about, I'm just going to trust that me letting you go will ultimately, like, I can't, and this has been a big lesson for me, right? I again, with how I was raised to be so loving and aware of others, that it kind of got to the point of, oh, well, let me help you. Let me control, because I can see the vision for your life. And sometimes it's easier for people to, again, be told how they should live and allow others to dream for them. But if you allow yourself to step back and stop doing the dreaming, even for those you love, I mean, it's the same, it's just the inverse, right? It's not letting other people inform your vision, but then also not, even though you might see it so clearly, and people want it, maybe someone is coming and being so open, but they're not filling your cup, and they're not life-giving to you, and they're actually, in essence, holding you back, even though you might be really filling them. I mean, they've got to learn that for themselves. They need to learn to fill their own cup.
You are listening to Bootstrapping Your Dreams Show with Manoj Agarwal. Businesses face numerous challenges, like finding the right product market fit, determining the market size, implementing a winning go-to-market strategy, crafting customer-centric USP, competitive analysis, looking for funding, building up cash flow, and profitability. We have made a lot of free resources available to the entrepreneurial community, including this podcast. We invite you to check out our websites and follow us on social channels. The links are in the show notes. We hope you find the resources useful and utilize them to grow your business. We also have some programs for entrepreneurs. If you find our content useful, then you will definitely find the programs outstanding. So do check them out. So coming back to your story, your journey, it seems like, you know, 2020 has been a year of awakening, change, sort of, you know, just reevaluation of life for many people around the globe. So was there a specific, like, you know, the pandemic or the shock that we all went through, did that have anything to do with your transformation, your journey, Or was it just sort of organically, it just so happened that, you know, you built your business around that time frame?
That's a good question. So I started the business in 2019, 6 months before the pandemic, and was grateful to experience growth during that time, which was a real blessing because that wasn't the case for so many. But as it pertains to what was really a catalyst for me, so we had a big loss in our family in 2014. It was just absolutely tragic. And the years following were really spent kind of tending to everyone involved and not really myself. It was a survival, right? And we have to at times take on that role. And while we're talking about roles here, and I'm saying willingly that I didn't do that, right? And sometimes, you know, it's not time to actually pull back and fill your cup. Sometimes it truly is necessary to be focused on filling the cup of others. But in 2020, it was kind of my time to turn inward and heal from what happened in 2014. And I started therapy. And at the same time, I started reading Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly. And so the outcome of both of those, I mentioned briefly about how I was raised to view emotions or lack thereof, just don't. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that acknowledging feelings in a moment and how I actually, the pain or even joy, right? Because you have to, in order to really see the true joy of a moment, you have to be able to experience the pain of another. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a whole new world, accessing the soul, I would say, honestly, for the first time. And it was just, it had been a long time coming, and it just happened to be where I started virtual therapy, and it brought so much clarity into my own state of being. Yeah. And that really catalyzed everything.
That's awesome. So speaking about therapy, you know, once again, like I've had therapy myself, and I advocate that to many people. But I find it's very interesting, even though people who have gone through it, they find it beneficial, but there is this stigma around therapy in our society, which is very strange, which is like, if you say I need to go get therapy, you're implying I'm crazy, and you know, therefore you do not belong in my life. Like,
yes, so I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. It's actually a real shame, I believe. And I think it's just the narrative is changing. So there's a few things here. So I very much was raised that way. And I think that there are some therapy sessions and therapists that facilitate a space where you just talk and you let out your feelings and you think about them and talk about them, which is, you know, I think that that's well and good. However, there's so much more to at least my therapy experience. I've only ever had two therapists, and each one has done this for me, where they've held up a mirror and shown me so much about the underlying themes and mindsets and just really thought processes that are manifesting in the behaviors and feelings that I share with them. But they've been so faithful to hold that mirror. And frankly, there have been so many times, I can't even tell you how many, countless, where I've walked away from therapy and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't believe I thought that. And so the honesty with which they've presented and kindness with which they've presented opportunities for growth as a result of me sharing honestly and doing the deep work, I mean, that is absolutely critical. And so it's not just, when I say therapy, it's not just going and thinking and feeling, which is part of it. That's the first part. You have to be able to have something to say. Mm-hmm. But the response that they've given and the accountability and the striving for more that they've pushed me towards, and even commitment to my own soul, that has been the most life-changing part, is the holding up of the mirror. Yeah, yeah. And now I've learned how to do that more so for myself. So I can go into moments and experiences, and I kind of watch myself and I catch myself and go deep in that moment of, ooh, why did I react that way? Let me change that, or even pull aside if necessary and sit with it so that I'm not bringing my unhealth into a moment.
Yeah.
I can remove myself or work through it in the moment, which is so critical for not only healthy personal relationships, but also business relationships. You know, if you're in a partnership or you have a team or even with a client, you know, if you're not able to really come from that place of health, it does translate into business. They are not separated.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Yeah, no, I can just see like how you, especially in the kind of work that you do, like, you know, building the brand, building a strategy, the more empathetic you are towards others, the better outcomes they will have and the smoother relationship that will be. So can you give us maybe an example, maybe a story, anything that has translated from your deep work into real objective business scenarios? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of go-getters, A-type personalities, they focus on, okay, you know, this is all good, but tell me, like, you know, what do I do in a boardroom? Like, how do I meet a client? Like, tell me how to, you know, take these concepts and translate into some real work.
Yeah, so the way that we build our target audiences has probably been one of the best ways that this is manifested. And from there, I mean, your entire campaigns are built, your entire, and I know I'm talking marketing, but there's two real ways. So I'll talk about the target audience, and then I'll talk to you about the values. I'm going to flip that. I'm going to talk about values first. So having really clear insight into the values of your business and your brand as a whole. So a strong brand, they set the expectation for the feeling that the customer will have when they actually interact with the product or service offering, right? And so it's emotional feeling about the experience. And so ultimately, and I'll use Southwest as an example because I love this case study. I mean, it's brilliant what they did. So in, I believe it was 2009 when other airlines started charging for bags. They went back to their brand, they went back to their values, and they considered, you know, we really, really want our customers to feel excited and happy when they fly with us. And we want them to feel kind of this like fun loving type of energy. Have you ever flown Southwest?
No, actually, it's been it's interesting because I know a lot about Southwest Airlines. I even am friends with a few executives there, but I haven't flown, so
hopefully. Well, you can tell them this story and tell them your friend's proud of them. but that's their brand motto. And if you fly on their planes, there's been times where they literally sang happy birthday to someone because they saw they saw the birthday when they were checking them in. You know, it wasn't even a premeditated thing. It wasn't even, I think it was just like a 60-year-old woman. Like, it wasn't even somebody like very, very old or very young or notable, or it was just this kind of everyday person, and they took the time to honor that person and make them feel so loved. And that is continually the theme that I, an experience that I have when I interact with Southwest. And so they hearkened back to their brand values while all of their competitors were making these big business decisions, and they decided not to charge for bags. And by consequence, they faced losing up to upwards of $500 million in just 1 year alone. And so they stuck to their values, made the decision not to charge bags. And thankfully, the outcome was they actually attracted all of these people to come and fly with them. And they now have this loyal customer base. So the ability to know your values and really cultivate them in a very intentional way based on the feeling you want to produce. And you have to have some level of emotional awareness to be able to think about the feelings and the emotions you want to produce. And I mean, 95% of our buying decisions are made in our subconscious, which is where our emotions live. And so that is just absolutely critical that you cultivate a brand based on that emotional awareness of how do we want to make our audience feel. Mm-hmm. So that's a values piece. That's just so, so important. Mm-hmm. And how empathy really impacts the values you create for your business and subsequently the business decisions you make. And then the second piece, developing target audiences. So one of our clients, we took about, I think it was about 40 to 50 hours. It was a good amount of time that we took, and we interviewed their sales teams. We did some customer calls with their key customers. We talked with stakeholders, and we just discussed their target audience? What are the experiences that you have when customers call? What are the questions they ask? Tell me about the demographic of each customer as it pertains to each one of your service offerings. Now, this was a shipping company, and they shipped from Puerto Rico to Alaska, and they had those two organizations in both respective places, and the audiences that they served in both of those places, well, they're very different. You know, mm-hmm. one's primarily Spanish speaking, the other is, you know, it's they're kind of isolated, and they have just completely different sets of problems and also different sets of values. Mm-hmm. And so we spent a lot of time just understanding the target audience based on the feelings of the audience when they interact with the product offering or service. What would happen if the boat didn't come on time? What would happen if their shelves weren't stocked? You know, their shipping services stocked Targets and Costco's and grocery stores, and they facilitated Christmas. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so we really dove into that, and then built out customer audience personas, and then built out the messaging associated with each one. So ideally, you want your brand story surrounding this is who we are, and you want that to be consistent. But when you consider your target audience, well, you've got your myriad of service offerings or products, and then you've got the different audience verticals. You could have the end customer, you could have strategic partners, you could have referrals. So you've got a slew of audiences that you need to take into consideration. And then what are the messages that are really going to emotionally resonate with them and move them towards you? Because the authenticity of the values and the brand itself, them being honest and transparent and forward, brand value driven and value forward in the way that they move and act and talk. And but then also having an idea of what will move the audience towards you. So it's the empathy towards the audience and the authenticity of the brand that ultimately allows for the connection to occur. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this at Traffic and Conversion, but the area where it occurs, the platform, could be social media. Could be digital targeting. It could be in-person events. And so taking a real good hard look at the target audience, not only considering their pain points, but their values, but also where they spend their time.
Yeah.
And so where they spend their time per vertical. So you might spend marketing dollars for your referral partners in one platform, whereas for another, you're going to spend time in another area.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how the emotional aspect really plays. Those are two areas. At least, and then there's many others, but those are the two biggest areas that I would say it's really important.
No, that's great. This gives some objective sort of preview to people about how, if you develop this sort of sixth sense of empathy, how it actually translates into business acumen,
right?
Because a lot of people can spend enormous amount of time, resources, money, trying to figure all this out. But if you can be dialed in, you can actually like zip through it.
Yes.
40-50 hours sounds a lot, but like consider many, people that I've been part of so many startups where they spent a decade trying to figure out.
Yes.
I
know.
Yeah.
I know. And I that was just the target audience in one of the locations. So it frankly, it's going to take you more time. Yeah. But that time is so well spent, because you know what? The feedback we got was the profiles that we created, it's been informing their marketing strategy for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Which is huge, So however much, the dollar spend that you have and you invest, the outcomes are really significant.
Absolutely. So let's talk about a few lessons you have learned, or maybe mistakes you have made in this journey, because we always learn more from our mistakes than our successes. So can you share anything around that?
Yeah. I was thinking about this, and I think that one of the biggest things that I have done that I wish I could go back and do is that I've not taken my own advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that, as entrepreneurs, I hear a lot of people say this, the services that you offer for your clients, you actually don't even use, which is especially, doing the competitor analysis. What are my competitors doing? What is my message for my target audience? What are my target audience? Really doing that deep work. And I think that's the biggest area for growth. And I think it's hard when you're faced with chicken and egg. Do I wait until everything's perfect, or do I move forward and build the plane while I'm flying it? Yeah. But as long as you're building the plane while you're flying it, not just flying it, which is, I think, what a lot of us do and what I did. Yeah. And I just kind of and stumbled into it, and it's been very, you know, meaningful and impactful, which I am grateful for. But I can only imagine if I had taken my own advice and taken the time to invest in my own business. And to your point earlier of investing in yourself.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a human nature. Like, you know, like when you live in a city, you don't visit the tourist attractions as frequently, right?
I love that example. That is totally me.
I think it's a common theme that I see, especially when you are starting your own business, bootstrapping it, or things like that. So that's I can relate to that. How about the role of mentors and coaches in your? So, you know, you learned a lot from podcasts, books. You went into therapy, but have you had any like specific mentors or coaches who have helped you accelerate your growth?
Yes. Yes, and actually, so two things. One, I've just started really, allowing, because it harkens to the second thing I want to say. There are so many people, there's a wealth of people who are just eager to give. And it's uncomfortable for me to receive, and I'm working through that right now. And in receiving mentorship and coaching that I've been, you know, really, really grateful for others to see me and be willing to invest over the last couple of months. It has just opened my eyes to a whole myriad of not only opportunities where they've been kind enough to give me, but just growth, you know, and just allowing for that bench of people to expand and receive from them, even if right now you don't have something really tangible to give back. It's a very vulnerable thing to receive without, you know, it's a very vulnerable thing to not have a transactional relationship.
Yeah.
You're intentionally choosing to be open to someone, not necessarily in a emotionally vulnerable way, but it is vulnerable to accept and receive and then not turn around and feel good about giving back. Yeah. And so that has been, and that would probably be a second lesson to your question previous, to really allow for people to speak into your life. And I would probably be saying something different to someone who is a natural taker, but giving more as is my nature, and that's been a really hard thing, and it's gotten in my way. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's it's been good to receive.
I think I can relate to that as well. But one thing I will say there is what I have realized is, it's such a intricate network of relationships in our lives that it may not be that we want to receive from one person and give the same to the other person. Maybe the idea is to receive from one person and pass it on to somebody else.
Yes, I love that. I really, really love that. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that that's just the way it works, given that you're a good human being. I think that that's kind of the natural progression of things.
Yeah.
Even one individual who's been very influential in my life, you know, they mentioned, Christine, I've had so many people give to me and invest in me. And this is just, it's literally, I don't love the phrase paying it forward, because that sounds, again, it sounds transactional. And I think that the most meaningful aspects are when it's just genuinely coming from your heart. It's not guilt driven. But it is kind of that natural flow and progression that if you're receiving and you have that heart of love and you're aware of yourself, you'll likely, it's just an outpouring, you know, because you're filled, you're going to outpour.
Yeah.
So I think that's really beautiful. And even the event that we were at, Steve Sims speakeasy event back in LA, he says that a couple times. He said that there. He says it on social media of just ask for what you want and don't be afraid. His new book, Go for Stupid. I love that concept of, well, if you're going for it, you're going to have to ask. And so not asking and not receiving, frankly, I'm even saying this and it's a challenge for me and I need to sit with this question, but has my lack of willingness to ask and receive been almost a an opportunity for me to hide behind that and not even be as brave as I could be if I was, if I got that out of my way, you know, because now I'm asking, now I'm open, now I'm being brave to move forward. I'm facing rejection if they say no. And so am I potentially using that fear of, or even a good desire to not take advantage? Is that potentially even an inhibition that I need to get past, or a inhibition that I need to get past, and really be brave in my asks to make the impact that I want to make? Yeah. So that's a good thing for me to consider after the show.
No, it's a great thought for the audience as well. So I what I will say is, like, you know, like with everything, like even riding a bike, you know, when you first get on the bike, you know, you need to start with just the balance part of it, like, you know, how do you balance it, and then slowly you get the balance thing, then you know you try other tricks and all that. So it just starts to come naturally as you self-evaluate and course correct.
And it's a self-evaluation. That's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned, is that the taking time for myself to not only calibrate with kind of the personal side, but also the business side. I mean, I was speaking with the former CEO of Jiffy Lube, and he was mentioning, you know, I asked him, because he was talking about all the businesses he's grown. And I was like, what is your secret? Like, what advice would you give me? And he said, just taking time to sit and be, because that's where innovation occurs. That's where creativity flows. That's where you see the solutions to the problems, because you haven't given yourself the time to really be creative and expand outward, rather than just being so fixated. What is the solution to this problem? Rather, you're kind of almost like looking up and out and allowing for other sources to influence you. So that's been a big lesson, is allowing for that time.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing such deep thoughts. It's been really interesting, entertaining, and really thought-provoking conversation. I think a very different episode in a long time. I hope audience will sort of, you know, listen to it and be forced to sit quietly for a few moments and look inward. So thank you so much. Now, before I let you go, if people want to connect with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So the best way, I'm on LinkedIn. That's where I'm pretty active on there. And then also Facebook. So Christine Marie, it's right there on the screen. It's spelled a little funky, C-H-R-I-S-T-E-N-E. And then M-A-R-I-E, Christine Marie.
Awesome. So we'll put those links for your social media handles on in the show notes.
Wonderful. Thank you. And if your audience would like it too, I have a free social media checklist that I use, where really, you know, the bringing all of this full circle, putting your personal brand, taking the time to cultivate it, putting it out there on social media, where you're really presenting yourself forward. It's just so meaningful. And so I'll send it to you. So that you can put it up there, just ungated. They can get it for free.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Thank you so much. Great topic of the day. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Bootstrapping Your Dream. Bootstrapping Your Dream. We bring you life-changing insights about starting and growing your business, making your life and family happy. Given the fact that you listened to the whole episode, we know you are an awesome fan. Awesome fan. So why not help us spread the message? Please share the podcast with others who can benefit from it. And if you are feeling extra generous, leave a review on iTunes or any other platform where you are listening to the podcast.